when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Normally doctors, solicitors, accountants, once they're established, if they're comfortable where they are and they don't have desires to rapidly expand or to be bought out, normally they're going to be good long-term tenants.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with commercial property buyer's agent, Brian McNichol. We discover how he made the shift from investing in residential properties, 14 of them to be exact, to commercial properties, why professionals like solicitors and doctors make the best long-term tenants, his greatest aha moment, and much, much more. As a commercial property buyer's agent, there are a variety of tasks McNichol does in a day, ranging from researching properties to assisting his clients in purchasing property.
As the name suggests, I basically specialise in just finding commercial property for my buyers. On a daily basis, I'm researching if there's a property I'm interested in. I'll ask for the information memorandum on the potential properties, get in contact with my clients, and do a rough feasibility, and then where it's appropriate we make an offer and basically help the client follow through to a successful purchase of the property.
McNichol specialises across the commercial space, although he does find that most of his clients do tend to focus on retail office accommodation and some on industrial.
Some of the properties that we've purchased have been small shopping centres and things like that. I haven't got too many clients that are interested in some of the more specialised areas of service stations or childcare centres and things like that. So it's really those particular areas that we seem to focus on, and that's driven particularly by our client needs.
And how long have you been in the commercial space for?
Probably getting close to 20 years now.
Wow. Is there a particular location that you focus on for commercial property?
I'm licensed in Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria. So they're the areas that I concentrate on. And depending on, again, what the needs of my clients are in terms of the yields that they're after, that sometimes dictates a little bit about which state we may look in and certainly which areas. But normally I try to avoid very regional areas and, you know, towns with possibly less than 10,000 population.
McNichol states that commercial property is garnering a lot more interest now that people know the kind of returns it can generate. And working with the client, he tries to figure out what it is that they require out of the property that they purchase, be it a recession-proof tenancy or a high net return.
I think particularly with the returns that people are getting on residential in particularly Sydney and Melbourne now, the secret's out at just what returns commercial properties can achieve, and normally with a lot less hassles involved. It's really a matter of sitting down with the client, listening to what they require, whether it be long tenancies. I guess the net return. I also look to try and, if it's a first-time investor, try and find a tenancy that is, as I call it, kind of going to be recession-proof. So that was part of the strategy that we started out with. So we ended up with doctor surgeries and things like that. And a lot of my clients have self-managed super funds, so we've got to be mindful of the requirements of, you know, what can be done within the super funds, how many tenancies there may be, and, you know, work within those guidelines as well.
For the majority of McNichol's life, although he has travelled and lived in other parts of Australia, he has been based in Brisbane.
After we were married, I went to Townsville and went to James Cook Uni up there for a while, came back to Brisbane and to University of Queensland. So most of our married life has been in Brisbane. We've had a couple of stints in Townsville, Hamilton in New Zealand, and in, two stints in Sydney. So, but the majority of the time has been based in Brisbane.
You mentioned that you went up to Townsville and also went to University of Queensland as well. What did you study there?
Commerce in both. Our eldest son was born in Townsville, so I had to basically, or I ended up with a job back in Brisbane. So had to transfer from James Cook back to UQ.
As part of his career journey, McNichol held a variety of roles during and after he achieved his university degree.
I started off in the clerical role, and then as progressed in uni, I ended up with accounting roles. And then together with a couple of other friends, we started up a taxation and financial planning business. So it was very much doing the traditional job type roles. It was only later when I ended up with a contract with the Queensland government that provided a bit of stability, and that's when I really got stuck into the property side of things. We had dabbled a little bit prior to that, but my income from the accounting and setting up the business and having three young children kind of meant that, you know, we really were restricted in just what we could do with property.
How many years were you within the accounting practice?
Probably would have been about close to 20 years.
Great. Did you deal with different types of businesses, or was there a specific type of business that you dealt with?
We concentrated on mainly small businesses and quite a variety across the board in that. Also with you know, retirees, people planning to retire, and then seeking advice on, you know, where people could place their money. At that stage, when, you know, people wanting to get ahead, you suggested negative gearing and going into buying property negatively geared. So that was very much the advice that I'd given people at that time, and advice that I followed myself.
After his accounting practice, McNichol moved into more of a contract role, where he went from being an accounting type of roles to property consultant, making his entry into commercial property.
I'd originally gone in for 3 months with the Queensland government, successfully completed that, and then a few months later they asked me to come in for 6 weeks to review a financial management practice manual. And basically, I said that it left a bit to be desired, so they said, okay, well, you know, redo it. And that 6 weeks ended up being close to 19 years. Things changed. Originally, it was particularly to do with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island councils. I had some work to do with Disability Services Queensland, and I gradually moved from the accounting and kind of the internal auditor type role for the councils through to more of a property consultant, I guess. We had to go through project services to actually deal with real estate agents and people like that, but I could advise project services as to what our requirements were, what we were prepared to pay and things like that. So probably for about 10 years I was doing that role with office fit-outs, office leasing, buying and selling property and that type of stuff. So it was, looking in hindsight, it was quite a valuable area that I ended up in.
But prior to entering into commercial property, McNichol invested in residential and would buy various types of properties.
Our first residential was an off-the-plan purchase in Spring Hill in Brisbane, a little one-bedroom unit which we furnished and rented out as, I guess, to executive rentals. And that was quite successful. We then moved on and purchased various properties for either splitting or renovating, with the idea of sometimes it was just buy, renovate, sell. A lot of the properties we purchased were good quality properties in the western suburbs. Where we purchased, we either moved the house or demolished the house and then split the property and then built. So we've had quite an array of different residential property developments and things like that as well.
Coming up after a break, we'll delve into what inspired Brian McNichol to start his property journey.
And I was lucky enough to hear one speaker, Peter J. Daniels. He's a multimillionaire from Adelaide, South Australia.
His aha moment.
At that stage, I thought, well, I don't know very much about commercial properties, so I didn't proceed.
How a doctor's surgery provided him with stable tenants.
It was one tenant, but he had about five doctors working out of that building, plus there were visiting consultants that would come in as well.
And that's next. I'm Tarun Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. McNichol decided to buy a property in New Zealand after the banks did not allow him to proceed when he already had a couple of properties.
It's got a lot of learnings. When we hit the brick wall with the banks in Australia, as most people do, once they get a couple of properties, the banks will say, no, you know, you can't proceed any further. We took some money and went to New Zealand and purchased a little property in a timber town called Tokoroa. It was a little cheapy, 20,000 New Zealand dollars. And we purchased that off a couple of marketeers who'd go to New Zealand, basically find property, put an option on it for 90 to 100 days and then on sell. We purchased that property sight unseen, and we also went with the property management that these marketeers had organised. All had gone fairly well for about 2 years, and then the timber mill cut their staff and our property became vacant. A few months later, we received a letter from the Tokoroa police suggesting that we needed to do something with our house, which had become vandalised both inside and out, and they'd sent some photos over. Basically, we managed to sell that one for about 22,000 New Zealand dollars in the condition that it was. So, you know, we were fortunate, but we certainly learned some lessons for that. You know, you don't buy things sight unseen. We select our managing agents ourselves. We don't buy in a one industry town or a town with a relatively small population. So I guess they're things that we still abide by today.
Do you remember which year you purchased this? Because I just want to try and put things in perspective on how much 20,000 New Zealand dollars was back then.
That one possibly would have been back in around about 2002, I think. 2002, roughly that time period.
So in comparison to, say, for example, purchasing a property in, say, Brisbane, how much would that have been?
Probably back then, maybe the cheapest we would have been looking at may have been around the 180,000, 200,000 mark.
Gosh, it was still a massive learning lesson.
It was, and it meant that we could basically purchase this without having any bank involvement. And the idea was that we would have then used that as a stepping stone to go to the bank later on with a unencumbered property that we could then use as collateral for the, you know, for the next property over in New Zealand.
Upon receiving notice from the police that his property in New Zealand was vandalised, McNichol felt numb and was quite shocked.
It raised questions about the property manager, why they hadn't notified us earlier, what were they doing about actually trying to get tenants and all the rest of it. So it raised a lot of questions. But again, you know, we were over here, that was happening over there, and all we could do was basically sit down, work out a strategy, and we decided that we wanted out of Tokoroa, and that's what we did.
However, there was a silver lining through purchasing and owning this property.
We were fortunate. We changed real estate agents, found somebody that was, you know, quite proactive, and I think this the purchaser was the only offer that we had. I had a rule that I never sell at a loss. And so we had to negotiate a little bit, and we were fortunate that, you know, they wanted the property, and we were successful in not selling at a loss. The vandalism side was, I guess, the small part. Really, it was, you know, purchasing sight unseen. When we did go over later on to Tokoroa, you know, there were a few things that we learned even in that site visit, which would have been useful in the first place. But, you know, it's water under the bridge.
McNichol's parents did invest in property, but not to the great extent. And McNichol credits his interest more to a successful property investor and speaker.
My father was an accountant and company secretary, so he spent a lot of time on the share market, both for work and in private. So my first inkling for getting ahead was through the share market. My parents at the time were typical. They owned, or they bought and they paid off their own house. I think in the time that they were married, they only had three houses in total. And it was only later on, after Dad had retired, that they actually purchased a unit on the Gold Coast. So it was very much share market influence there. My foray into property was I'd attended a couple of speaking engagements that were being held. Again, back in the 1970s, early 1980s, there wasn't a, you know, the market of, or the plethora of people going around speaking on property. And I was lucky enough to hear one speaker, Peter J. Daniels. He's a multimillionaire from Adelaide, South Australia. And that was possibly the start of the influence on the property ladder.
What's interesting is that's so true. When you said even back in 1970s and 1980s, we never had so much content as we have in today's time that was spread around plus that many speakers. We didn't even have the internet to be able to access that. So I would assume that everything was sort of on newspaper. That would have been quite a lengthy time to be able to get that information that you need to make one decision to purchase a residential property or commercial property. Would that be the case?
It was very much so. And I guess one of the things you learn as an accountant is conservatism. So I spent a lot of time researching. My wife's a librarian. So again, you know, there's the research capabilities there. And we did spend a lot of time looking before we found what we considered was a good property, which was the one in Spring Hill. When I said we bought it off the plan, the building was partly constructed, so it wasn't completely off the plan. So we could actually put on a hard hat and walk around and see the layout of the building. And it was a nice little investment. And a good first investment for us.
This first property of McNichol's, he did sell in order to fund future property purchases.
It was one that probably, it provided a nice rental income, but being an apartment, there was nothing that we could actually do we couldn't subdivide it or extend it or do anything like that. We did as much as we could by furnishing it and renting it out to executive rentals. At that stage, I think we ended up with some movie producers or actors or something, and they rented it out for quite a number of months. So the kitchen hardly ever got used in the place when we, you know, when they moved out. So
McNichol shares with us one of his light bulb moments, which was when an accountant recommended he diversify his portfolio by getting into commercial properties.
We probably had about 14 residential properties at that stage, and he said, you know, you should diversify. And at that stage, I thought, well, I don't know very much about commercial properties, so I didn't proceed. About 5 years later, I again got told to have a look at commercial property. And this time, because we're hurting financially with the negative gearing, we then looked at commercial. I studied and learned as much about it as I could. And then we proceeded with our first purchase, which was a doctor's surgery. It had the potential for a high-rise commercial, and we'd set parameters for what we were after. So we wanted at least an 8% net return. We wanted annual increases. We wanted a good lease with options, and we wanted a good tenant. So the ad for this one originally spoke about being vacant possession. But when you read the fine print, it said that a new lease would be negotiated with the successful purchaser. It's probably why it had been sitting there for a little while and nobody had seen it. So we negotiated a new 5-year lease. We ended up with over 8% net yield. We had 3.5% annual increases. And we could identify four different exit strategies on the property. So we proceeded with that purchase. And that was basically the aha moment for us. And then from there, we then started with the with converting our negative gearing into positive cash flow
through commercial property.
Mainly through commercial property. We did have to sell down some of the residential, and we did that strategically. So we identified what were the properties hurting us the most. We'd then go and maybe do a bit of a quick renovation, splash a bit of paint around, or stage it for the selling, put it on the market and then sell. And then we repeated that a couple of times. So it was a combination of selling down the residentials that were hurting us, plus purchasing the new commercial properties.
McNichol goes on to share a little bit more about his first commercial property, the doctor surgery, and why professionals such as doctors and solicitors are good long-term tenants.
It was one tenant, but he had about five doctors working out of that building, plus there were visiting consultants that would come in as well. There was nothing flash. It was in a good location. You know, had a brand new McDonald's down the end of the street, and there was new developments happening next door. So we could see the potential for that one.
Definitely. And that's the thing with commercial. It's nothing flash or special. I would assume a doctor doesn't usually change every year or two like a tenant would after 12 months in residential.
Well, this tenant or this doctor had been there for 17 or 18 years. He owned the building and was selling it because he'd gone into a business venture with somebody else and needed some money. About 2 years ago, he decided to retire, and he then unsold the practice to another doctor that had been there for 9 years working with him. So, you know, we've got the continuity again of the doctors, and, you know, people knowing that knowing their doctors, they know where they are. So normally doctors, solicitors, accountants, once they're established, if they're comfortable where they are and they don't have desires to rapidly expand or to be bought out, normally they're going to be good long-term tenants.
So, inspired by Brian McNichol's journey, we'll keep the conversation going in a future episode of Property Investory, where we'll discuss his strategy.
So, we'd buy a 810 square meter property. We may move the house to one side. We'd build or maybe sell the vacant block of land.
His $1.1 million property purchase?
It was really nothing flash, but it provided a net of about $92,000 a year.
The biggest reason why he got into commercial property and become a buyer's agent?
Crazy type hours. One time I came back to one of the train stations and couldn't remember where I parked the car, or thought I couldn't remember where I parked the car, only to find the car had been pinched.
And that's next time in a future episode of Property Investory.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com.